We've got another great week of What Do You Know with Joe. Let's get to the intro.
Sit down and chop it up. Let's talk about it.
Well, let's ask the right question.
Who's convinced?
We're starting to see the mind brain stuff now.
It's What Do You Know with Joe. What's going on, everybody? We've got another great week of What Do You Know with Joe. As always, we've got Baxter, we've got Winnie, we've got Lindsay. Little Nugget's still doing great. This week, we have the great Coach Michael Schwartz joining me. Coach Schwartz is the head basketball coach at East Carolina University, my alma mater, go Pirates. He also recently has been, you know, the assistant coach at University of Tennessee. He's been coaching at Tulsa, Texas, Arizona, you name it. He's been there. He's just a great coach. I think everyone will really learn, you know, what it means to be a hard worker and, you know, actually, you know, he shows quite a little bit of loyalty, not only to his coaching staff, but to his players and to his family. And I think that's something that everyone really will hear in this episode. Really excited for everyone to listen in. We ask him the great fifth grader question as well. He has a great answer. You just learn a lot about a really good guy. I want to give a shout out to my sponsor, Sneakerhead Golf. The promo code's still live, Joe15. Sweet stuff. You'll see it on the YouTube portion of the video this week. I've started wearing the swag that they gave me. It's great. It finally all came in. So everyone go check that out. Like I said, great golf head covers, great apparel, great everything. Sneakerhead Golf. But anyways, enough of that. Let's go ahead, jump right into the episode with Coach Schwartz. It's awesome. Let's get into it. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of What Do You Know with Joe. I have the great Coach Michael Schwartz with me. For those of you who don't know, Coach Schwartz is the current head coach at my alma mater, ECU, and very excited to have him on. Coach Schwartz, thank you so much.
Joe, appreciate you having me on here. Thank you.
Awesome. Very excited to have you. So we'll definitely get to, you know, the ECU team, and, you know, we're definitely excited to talk a little about that. But before, would love to learn a little about you more. Would love to learn more about, you know, your upcoming and what was there. So you were born in Southern California, right? Specifically LA. That was where you're from.
Yep. Born and raised in Los Angeles, and was there until I was 18, until I went off to college and went up to Northern California for a couple years before I ended up at Texas. But yeah, definitely spent my childhood and teenage and high school years in Los Angeles, and, you know, loved every minute of it.
Yeah, so you kind of alluded to that. What was it like growing up there, especially, you know, from like a sports background? I know, I'm sure you had some heavy sports in there. You know, what was it like growing up in California? Tell us a little about your family, and, you know, were they athletic? Were they into sports as well?
You know, funny enough, not a heavy sports family when it comes to that. In terms of, you know, my uncle and my grandfather really loved sports, and they were real father figures for me growing up. I have a younger brother who's a really good athlete. He ended up running track at Texas, and he also played high school football and college football prior to going to Texas. So, you know, my immediate core group, my grandfather, my uncle, and my brother, avid sport lovers, you know, but we didn't have anything in terms of basketball or nor lineage in my family, basketball coaching or playing or anything like that. I think there was just this natural love for the sport, natural love for sports in general. I was able to play baseball, basketball, and football in high school, and you know, just growing up, LA is a great place. You know, the Lakers, the Dodgers, when I was growing up, the Raiders were there. There's great universities there. So, you know, it was obviously a huge part of my life. It was the biggest part of my life was basketball and sports.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of beat me to that question there. It sounded like you had some sports in there, but you also played some other ones. What was the competition like for, you know, basketball, football, baseball? It, like, because you went to Beverly Hills High School, which is, I have a feeling you might have rubbed shoulders with some people now. Everyone's been like, no way, you went to school with them. But what was the competition like, you know, there? What was it, you know, like, especially I can imagine it was competitive since that is such a big area.
Yeah, and that was, when I look back on it and I think about when I was in high school and the guys that I played against, and I think about Andre Miller, who had a long NBA career, long NBA career, and player by the name of Toby Bailey. And Toby Bailey was great player at UCLA, and he was in the NBA. And Harold Miner was at Inglewood High School. And there was a player by the name of Stace Bozeman at Morningside High School that was a great dual threat player that ended up going to USC and playing basketball and football. And I mean, the list goes on. I mean, and as much as it was with high school competition, what you really got was the ability to be at UCLA playing in the men's gym there and the open run there, where the college players, high school players, and even NBA players would be there all summer. So that opportunity was big and very memorable for me, to be honest. I just had a chance to play against quite a few guys that have played and played in the NBA and just good players. So I think it was good for me.
Absolutely. And imagine with, like you said, with that much exposure, you know, were you getting some looks, like you mentioned, you played in Northern California, were you getting some looks for basketball, any other sports either? Were you getting the looks you maybe wanted to get, you know, when you were playing in high school?
No, that wasn't it. Unfortunately, it didn't result in quite that. And look, I loved it. And I had aspirations like every other adolescent youth that loves basketball. You're going to be in the NBA and you want to play Division I. But you know what? You love competition. You love the game of basketball. You love team. And so I ended up playing Division II basketball for a great, great coach named Pat Fiscaldo, who just recently retired from there within the last couple of years, and I still have a relationship with, and he had a huge impact on my life. And I had a dream to play Division I, and I was fortunate enough to be able to accomplish that, you know, kind of a different route around. It wasn't your traditional route, and I ended up at Texas, and that's where I met Coach Barnes, and I was a walk-on there. But as far as being a highly touted recruit or somebody that had options to go play where I wanted to play, not at all. I had to scratch claw for every opportunity.
I think a lot of people will be able to relate to that, and I think another aspect you had mentioned, I think a lot of people, you know, don't get that perspective, and I'd love to get your inside scoop on, you know, What was that like playing at a D2, playing at Sonoma, and then having to, you know, transfer over to Texas? I don't think that is a route. Not a lot of people, maybe they have friends or things like, or family that have done that, but not a lot of people know about it. I think, like you said, it creates this work ethic of having to scrap and, you know, work hard to get where you're at. Tell us a little about, you know, your time at Sonoma and then how you were able to transfer over to Coach Barnes.
I loved my time at Sonoma. And again, it was because of Coach Fiscaldo, the coaching staff, and the teammates that were there. And I was honestly, Joe, probably just young and naive. And I had this dream of wanting to play Division I. And, you know, looking back, it has worked out nicely. Obviously, I'm so thankful for it. But, you know, taking myself back to that time, I don't know, maybe not leaving a Division II and getting an opportunity to actually play and be counted on would have been a great experience, too. But you make decisions, and I did it. And, you know, once I had the opportunity to be at Texas, it happened to be Coach Barnes' first year there. And the roster was depleted with the normal turnover that still happens these days. And so we actually, my senior year there as a walk-on, we won the Big 12 championship outright in the regular season. And we had 8 scholarship players on the team. And so, and we won the Big 12 that year, and Coach Barnes' first year there. And, you know, we had some really good players, some NBA players on that team. We didn't have a lot of depth, but what I learned was just in the end of the day, work ethic and what you set your mind to and how hard you have to fight for is really the bottom line. And it doesn't matter if it's Division II or at Texas, that just had to be my mindset.
Absolutely. I think that, like you said, that work ethic, that mindset. Did you have aspirations of trying to make that jump to the NBA, or was it one of those where you were like, I kind of recognize where I'm at, and I think coaching might be the better avenue for me?
Well, the simple answer to, do I have aspirations and dreams, Joe? I mean, I still dream about it. I still wish I was in the NBA as a player. But you know what? You hit a point in college where you realize that, hey, probably I got to think about what I want to do when my eligibility is up in terms of playing the game. And it was a very seamless transition for me in terms of knowing that I wanted to coach. I love the game. I love to compete. And the aspect and the thought of helping others and teaching and really learning more about the game was just a natural fit for me to at least pursue it. Not necessarily that I would be good at it, but that I could at least pursue it. So yeah, I dreamt about the NBA, but again, Joe, I still dream about it.
That's, I don't know why I found that so funny, you know, especially after you got your degree and, you know, like you said, staying around the game and you made that connection with Coach Barnes, and we'll even talk about that down the road, especially because at Tennessee, but you know, what was it like being like the grad assistant, like being a GA on his staff? And maybe you can tell us, you know, was it similar when you found, like, maybe the better phrasing of this question, what's the difference of being a player of Coach Barnes and maybe being on his staff, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing as a player was I knew my role. I knew my role as a player. and I was a walk-on on that team. I did have the opportunity to, I think, fulfill a more of a role in practice and playing because we were so short on bodies. So mm-hmm. I did get to experience that, but obviously I didn't play a lot. And when it came to games and things like that, it was very minimal. Mm-hmm. So when I have the opportunity to make the jump into coaching, so to speak, and I get a chance to be the grad assistant that summer, really what I'm doing is I'm with the guys in the gym with them. I'm a peer of theirs. I'm still actually trying to graduate because I had to finish up in the summer. So now I go from their teammate to being in the gym, rebounding with them, working them out. And so it was a cool transition. It was great, yeah. You know, but the one thing was I was never really on their level as a player the year before. So I really had more of a coach's mindset as a walk-on. So when I made that transition, you know, was it different? Obviously it was different, but the unique thing was now I got a chance to jump right in and be in the gym with the guys still, but instead of them passing to me and us shooting together, I'm passing to them and trying to help them go hard and learn, hey, yeah. This is what coach wants. This is what Coach Barnes is looking for.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You get to mold it a little bit more in that aspect. Like you have more of an integral role, which is cool. And especially now that you got a year under, how did that first year go? You know, was it were there specific moments you maybe can, and if not, that's okay. Were there any like specific moments in that first year where you felt as though like you were maybe getting comfortable with it and this was something you could see yourself doing for a long time?
You know, Joe, I knew I wanted to do it. So basically, we lost in the NCAA tournament to Purdue my senior year. We lost, okay. And I can't remember if it was on a Thursday night or Friday night. I can't remember, you know, if we were on the first night or second night. But we lost in the first round on a late shot in the game. It was in Boston, the Fleet Center. It was the first year of the Fleet Center. And okay. We lose. Yeah, and so the night before we played, Coach Barnes had came up to me, and we were at Boston University, and he came up to me and talked to me about, hey, what do you want to do this summer? You know, do you want to stick around here and see, you know? And I said, well, I got to be here for school, and yeah, I'd love to stick around. I mean, you know, and he said, hey, you know, we can do stuff with camps and this and that. So anyways, it was a very generic conversation. But what I do remember is that Monday, we lose, we get back from Boston, we get back to Austin, and I'm in the office breaking film down on that Monday, and I'm in there watching film and cutting film up, and I was learning how to do the video, and it just went from there. And there wasn't a day that went by that I didn't come to the, instead of going to practice, I went to the office in between class or after class, and I sat in the film room and I learned how to use it and watch film and made edits of NBA players. And it was just, that was the transition. So, and I was still an undergraduate. So I very vividly remember that time. You know, going right from being in uniform and losing in the NCAA tournament to being in the office that following Monday, learning how to break film down.
And film was, you know, such a, I think, like you just said, like a beginning part of your career. How did that maybe prepare you? Because from anyone who's like, look, either just looked you up or known you or followed you, you've been fortunate enough to be with a lot of good programs. What was your interest about, you know, was it because you're originally from California? What was your interest then to, you know, go back to maybe Long Beach State and be a video scout for them?
Yeah, great question. Really good question. And you know what? The answer is me being really naive about this business. Okay, that's the truthful answer. I was at the best place I could ever be at Texas with Coach Barnes. I was in a great, great place. I did not know enough about this business. My family was and still is the most important thing to me, and they are all in Los Angeles. So as a young aspiring coach, you feel like you can stay in coaching and you can go do it where you want to do it. And right. that's just not the case. Coaching, right. it, you got to go where the opportunity is. And so I tried to get an opportunity at Long Beach State, and I left Texas, and looking back, it all has worked out. And I'm very thankful for that, but that probably wasn't the best move for me, but I did it because I wanted to get back. My mom was there and my brother was there and family. And so Long Beach State happened, but I actually was a volunteer at Long Beach State. They didn't have a position. I ended up not getting the position that I wanted when I originally was going for it. So I ended up having to volunteer there for a year. And I'm very thankful to Wayne Morgan, the head coach at the time, for allowing me to do so.
Yeah. And I think kind of like a small tangent of that, I think one takeaway so far for people who have been listening to this is, you know, one, you got to be the ability to try, but two, also, you know, I think a lot of people
could definitely take away, like, having a strong work ethic and having that mentality of, you know, hey, even if it, like you just said, I might not get a full-time position, definitely trying and definitely, you know, get putting yourself out there. And, you know, it might not always be, you know, what you think. Mm-hmm. You may not always, you know, if you don't try, you may not know. And, you know, like you said, you're fortunate to be in the position you're in. But I think it's definitely one, I think, especially, you know, being younger in my career, having that, you know, being naive myself, it's one of those things where, hey, you may fall and you may not think it's what you want it to be, but you got to at least try.
No doubt. And, you know, and again, I don't know anybody, even really people that we all know and we all look up to as great success stories mm-hmm. that haven't failed or made mistakes.
Right.
I mean, that is part of the process. That's part of the journey. And it really sometimes is the most important part a lot of time. But again, so it's not about the mistakes we make, and it's about how do we respond to them.
Right. And so moving, now that you wanted to jump back, you got to jump back to Texas. Did Coach Barnes, you know, kind of open you with welcome arms, or was it one of those where, again, you kind of had to work your way back up, or was it maybe an easier transition back?
Well, so after that year at Long Beach State, obviously it was a big part of me that realized, man, I would sure love to still be at Texas there with Coach and everyone that I knew there. And it just so happened that there was a staff position that potentially mm-hmm. was going to be available. And so, but we didn't know that for sure. So I went out there that summer and I worked camps and I did things like that and stuff I would have done anyways. Stuff
right.
if there was no position. Coach said, hey, do you want to come work camps? You know, back in the day, camps were a big deal. You go to places in the summer, you work camps, you volunteer places.
Right.
And so I worked camps there. So when I went back in May or June or whenever it was, I didn't know that I would be definitely back there the next year. That was not a foregone conclusion at all. I was in the next step of my career, and you're out there looking for what's going to be for that next season, for the 2002-03 season. Where am I going to be? But in that summer, a good place to be was back in Texas, because I knew right. people, had worked with them before. And at the end of the summer, or near middle, I should say more middle of the summer, he said, hey, this opportunity is going to present itself. And obviously that was a no-brainer, Joe. And I was very excited to be back.
Absolutely. And kind of making a further jump in history before you also had some time around like USA Basketball working with their, you know, U20 or I believe it was U20 team. Mm-hmm. And you're around some of their, you know, you were around some big names around that time. How do you think that role kind of helped you prepare also for, you know, where you are today?
It was such an awesome experience. And the way that happened was Rob Lanier, who's now the head coach at SMU. He mm-hmm. was a coach when I was a grad assistant at Texas. He was an assistant coach there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a relationship with some of the directors and people in the front office at USA Basketball.
Okay.
And so he got me as a grad assistant. He got me the opportunity. So one summer I had the chance to go not only be at the World Championship Trials with the U19 World University Game Trials in Colorado Springs, but I had a chance actually to be with a collegiate select team that competed against the U.S. Olympic team for 7 straight days.
Wow.
And then we went to Hawaii, and for 6 days we competed on the island of Maui, practiced every day with them, against them. And then on that night we flew and we competed on Oahu at the University of Hawaii's campus. We played a game. They that was as that team was preparing for the Olympics that year.
Yeah.
So that would have been the 2000 Olympics. They would have been getting ready for it. So we actually, that summer, they were getting, you know, so we did that early in the summer. But long story short, that experience was so vital for me, because what it was it was Bob Huggins,
yeah,
Mike Jarvis, were the two coaches. It was a physical medical trainer and mm-hmm. myself. That's it. And it was us four. And so from helping in drills to doing laundry, to making sure Coach Huggins had the socks he needed, to making sure the guys' laundry got done at night, to driving them around to get something to eat. You had to do it all.
Yeah.
It was just an unbelievable experience for me.
I bet. And I thought about it too, and I was trying to think, who's on that team? That 2000 team, like
the that was
Vince Carter, Kevin Garnett. I mean,
Kevin Garnett, Gary Payton, Vince Carter. And I got Rudy Tomjanovich, I believe, was the head coach mm-hmm. of the team. I got a chance to watch it every day and watch them practice. Obviously, mm-hmm. we practiced, and then we would do some light scrimmaging and competing against each other. And I got a chance to see a lot, and I'm a young guy, and in the evenings in the hotel lobby, all the coaches would get together, and you would have front office people, you would have the coaches, you'd have the NBA coaches, the college coaches, and just watching that interaction was, you know, I was just obviously wide-eyed and watching, but great memory, and, you know, just thankful for it.
I can't imagine watching some of those, because that's like when those, one, from a scrimmage perspective, those players are like in their prime, even the U-20 guys that you were coaching with, but then also, like you said, the you can't put a price on the value that you learn from just sitting in those hotel lobbies. And
that's right. That's right. Just observe it. Just observe it.
Yeah, just trying to be a sponge, soak all that up. So now moving more, you know, especially as you're, you know, USA's done, you're back into coaching, you're jumping around to different programs. You know, you're in Miami, you're with Tennessee, you're with all these great programs. You know, you were given more and more responsibilities as your career goes on naturally. You know, what are some of the skills, and a lot of people will attest to you for your defensive capability and what you can analyze with the defense. You know, what are some of the skills that you bring in when analyzing a defense? You know, that, you know, it's not the total secret sauce, but, you know, what are some things you look at when you're trying to look at, you know, a defense and analyzing, you know, a competitor?
Well, I think the first thing you got to look at is what is the philosophy of the defense. Okay. Some, you could have a great, great defense and be very pressure oriented. You can have a great, great defense and be more, less pressure, but protect the basket, protect the paint. You can have a great, great defense with changing defenses up, and you keep teams off balance. So the first thing you're going to look at is, are we dealing with a high pressure? Are we dealing with something where they're going to try and run us out of our offense? Or are we trying to run someone out of their offense with pressure? Are you doing it with keeping them off balance, maybe giving different looks, man, zone, different man-to-man looks? Or are you more of a protect the paint defense, a team that's going to keep the ball in front and force contested jump shots? I don't know if any is better than the next. I just know that that's the first thing probably defensively you're looking at. What style of defense are we going at here? Like a blitzing defense in football versus a contained defense. Right. You know, you're just looking at the different style so you can say, hey, here, what are we up against?
Right, right. And I think, honestly, some of that sounds like you could apply that to some things in life, you know, just kind of, you know, what are the first things you're trying to look at from, you know, any sort of competition. But similar kind of question, do you take kind of that same, as because similar to how you guys, how you analyze defense, you're very touted about, highly touted about, you know, how you recruit. Do you look for a same similar kind of things when you're recruiting players? Not to like get into any specific needs, but just the general sense of when you're trying to look at a guy, and, you know, what are some of the things that you first kind of try to take a look at?
Yeah, no, I think that's very, and I'm going to be totally transparent with you. I think we try, and our whole thing here is these four things. We're going to look at the character of the prospective student athlete, number one, okay, that we really want to see that. We're going to look at the competitiveness of that student athlete. And again, you know, you're going to do your best to evaluate that. You have limited opportunities. You're trying to gain what you can through talking to people, watching them play, watching them practice, but character them as a person on and off the court, the competitive spirit that they have, the work ethic that they have. Again, something that in recruiting, it's a challenge. You're doing your best to find out the work.
Right.
You never truly know until someone is on campus. And then you really know when you go through adversity together, really what a person is made of. But you do your best to find this out in recruiting leading up to decisions. And then the last thing is the humility. You know, one thing that I do struggle with a little bit is extreme high ego. Because I think a high ego can be detrimental to a team. I think great confidence can be really, confidence combined with humility can be a championship type formula. But just a high ego and no humility, I think now you're running the risk of, in my opinion, in our opinion here at ECU, honestly disrupting that chemistry.
I agree. I think, you know, is a guy all about himself or is about a team? I mean, there's always five players on the court. You can't, I mean, sure, like, yeah, that you can be an all-star and you can be great, but I'm sure even some of the guys who are the best in the pros will tell you now they like to be playmakers too. They don't want to just be, you know, you can't do it all by yourself. So from your time from, you know, being a GA assistant at Texas from the very first time all the way to, you know, let's say even last season at Tennessee, are there any times, you know, that you know, and then everything in between, because like we mentioned, you've been on some great programs, you know, are there any stories or either times where they're thinking it was a pivotal point in your career or maybe, you know, something that really kind of made things click from a, you know, being a defensive guru or something that maybe helped you grow even more?
Yeah, you know, I think just you saying that right away, I could point to a few things. The experience in 03, getting a chance to make it to a Final Four and be there and you know, you win the first weekend of the tournament, you win two games, second weekend you win two games, and now you're playing against Syracuse in the national semifinal against Carmelo Anthony, and being right there in New Orleans, that was an experience that, you know, I mean, it could be the only time you ever get a chance to taste, and a lot of great coaches and players are a part of this game that have had a lot more success than I have ever had and have never been able to taste that because it's that elusive of an opportunity. So that's one that I remember, getting my first assistant coaching position at UT San Antonio for Tim Carter, a great coach that I have great respect for. In fact, he'll be here at practice tomorrow to come visit. So I'm so looking forward to that. But obviously a moment that I'm very indebted for to him. And that was big for me to get that and actually be an assistant coach in Division I. I want to say it's my second year at the University of Miami. Second year at the University of Miami, we start out 2-6 in conference play in the ACC. And we go 6-2 in the back half, including a big, you know, a week where we beat Maryland, Georgia Tech, and Duke in the same week. And we're all really good teams. And we make the NCAA tournament that year. We beat St. Mary's in the first round. They had Patty Mills on the team. And we lose by 3 points to, funny enough, Coach Barnes in Texas to go to the 16 by 3 points. So that is a moment that I'll always, you know, that year, that season was, you know, that was just something very strong for me. And then moving towards Fresno State, where I had a chance to really do a lot with the offense, everything. I really worked hard with the offense at Fresno State and at Tulsa, and then Tennessee, where I was very fortunate. Coach Barnes gave me the responsibility of the defense. So those are kind of moments that that stick out to me and kind of a little bit of a path.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people will hear those and be like, dang, those are – I too would probably say those are pivotal points. And then kind of similar question too about, you know, from the coach, you know, from the places you've been, and you kind of just name drop some people there. Have there ever been, you know, former players that you have either interesting stories or pivotal moments where you, you know, they maybe helped you form as a coach? As you mentioned, when you're looking for a player going through either a time where they've gone through adversity or, you know, a moment where they, you know, either they came in and they had a moment where it could have been a make or break. Do you have any maybe stories there where, or any insight or pivotal moments that you remember where you thought, okay, this has helped me grow as a coach and I can use it with recruits down the road, you know, that helped maybe form a player. Maybe they didn't even go to the NBA, but it helped them later on in life maybe, or, you know, it helped you grow more as a coach.
Yeah, and then that's a great point. And the ones that stick out in my head just, and obviously you think about guys that were successful, not only in college, but into the NBA or professional. TJ Ford as a youngster at Texas, I was a young guy. I was more in the gym with guys, things like that. And he, at the time, he, you know, individual workouts aren't what they are now. It wasn't the same. Now it's all workout, you know, but that was the early 2000s. And so it was more team, play pickup. It wasn't as much these individual workouts. But TJ every day and I, he and I used to go into the gym, the student gym, because we didn't have a practice facility. And we had a 450 shot routine that we worked every day. And we did it. And it was just he and I. There was no one else in the gym. It was something. It's the way he wanted to work. He didn't want to be doing individual workouts in front of everybody. So that's how he did it, because he was an absolute killer on the court competing and as a player. But he needed to improve his shot, and he knew he needed to. And that's the way he wanted to do it. And I remember learning that about him, saying, hey, okay, this is how he likes to do it. You know, I remember being at Fresno State and thinking about a player named Tyler Johnson, who had a long NBA career. And Tyler was a guy, when we got to Fresno State, he was on the fence if he was going to make it or not. He really was. And he really, in terms of staying on team, he was kind of, and he totally flipped and devoted himself to an unbelievable work ethic, changed everything about how he approached the game. And he deserves all the credit. Sure. And here he is, and he signs a 5-year, $55 million contract, you know, years down the line, and he plays for Eric Spoelstra, and Pat Riley believes in him with the Miami Heat, and he's played with the Brooklyn Nets before. So I think about his story, and there's a lot of guys in between. And then the last one, a guy that had a huge impact on me was a player by the name of Eve Pons at Tennessee. 4 years, graduated, had a chance to leave after his junior year, came back for his senior year, and to this day, the hardest worker I've ever been around and one of the most appreciative players I've ever been around in terms of had no entitlement about him. Just went out, and his work ethic was second to none. And he and I are still very close to this day. He plays in Paris for Asvel Paris, Tony Parker's team, and he was with the Memphis Grizzlies last year. But there's so many great stories, to be honest with you. We could name a lot of players' names that, that have impacted me, Joe, way more than I've impacted them. But those are three just very stories that I could think of off the top of my head.
And I'm, you know, just to what you said, to give you credit too, I think on the flip side of that, I'm sure there's many players that I could speak to that would thank you, Coach Schwartz, for, you know, the impact you had on them. And I think, you know, that kind of situation can sometimes go both ways. And you both, and the right thing you can do is just have that mentality of, you know, selflessness and, you know, wanting to help the other person. And now part of the conversation that I'm really excited to talk about is your time with ECU. So, you know, are you excited about the job? Are you ready to go? Or, you know, tell us, I know we can't get too much into the details, but, you know, was it one of those things when you saw the opportunity, you were like, I want to jump on that?
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here, Joe. I mean, the dream come true in terms of not only having a chance to be a head coach at a Division I program, but even more so a place like ECU, a great program. There's great people here, great leadership here. You know, this conference, it's a great basketball state. There's so many great things about ECU and this opportunity that, yeah, I mean, I think you could tell I'm really fired up about it. And in terms of the opportunity, I think one thing that, you know, this is my 24th season. Okay. Yeah. I did not become a head coach or do by just being in a few years or like this has been a long journey. And what throughout the journey, what I realized is, you know, the best thing I can do is just try and prepare by keeping my head down where I am. So there had been other times where I had been involved with jobs, not gotten them or wanted to be involved with the job and I couldn't, or maybe a job was there and it wasn't the right one. And what I realized is the only thing you need to do is keep your head down where you are, do what you're trying to do, stay in that lane. And when something presents itself, you got to be ready because you don't know if you'll get another crack at it. So when I heard it was a possibility and when I was involved, needless to say, I couldn't be more excited.
That's awesome. And I'm very excited to have you there as an ECU. I think ECU alumni who hear this will definitely be because, you know, ECU basketball, for the most part, you know, we've had some great coaches, Jeff Lebo, you know, Coach Dooley was just there. And I think everyone always has the, you know, excitement to, you know, want to, you know, make ECU basketball great. And I think we're taking the right step with, you know, hiring you. And I think also, you know, I think just like with, I mean, the great example would be ECU's football program. You know, these things where people have it, just like I said, the expectation where, you know, they want to make it a good program. There's a lot of possibility there. These things take time and it's a progress. You know, what are some of the things you're trying to bring to the ECU program? I think we talked a lot about some of the, where you come from, but, you know, what are some of the things maybe early on and even down the road, what are you trying to bring to the program and, you know, maybe be a little bit different than the past?
Yeah, you know, and you said it best. There's been a ton of great coaches here, including Coach Dooley, Coach Lebo, and many, many others. We know that. And so the first thing we're going to do is build on the positives that they laid a foundation here. Because where we are right now, we wouldn't be here in terms of the opportunity we have if it wasn't for some of the stuff they've done. I mean, we have a fantastic practice facility, and I had nothing to do with that. But that facilities here were built by the players and coaches of the past. So we're building on that, and then we got to put our spin and our vision forward and what we want to establish, whether it's style of play, offensively, defensively, who we are, how we do things as a program on and off the court. So really, to answer your question, Joe, what we're trying to do right now is we're laying the foundation of our standards. What is our program stand for? What is the culture of our program? And I know that's a very, you know, obviously, I don't want to say overused, but it's a word that's used a lot, the culture. Mm-hmm. But it's the truth. I mean, we are trying to establish who we are as a program. What do we do? Not only what we do, but how we do it. And that is not embedded yet. I mean, we want this thing to be something that year after year carries over throughout the locker room and through coaches. But right now, everything we do, it's the first time that we are exposed to it as a team. So it takes constant reinforcement, and then you're reminding the next day. There's no players right now to remind someone else, hey, this is how we do things at ECU, or this is how we do things now. So we're just working on that, and we're trying to establish that foundation, that standard. And then from a basketball standpoint, who we're going to be from a defensive standpoint and a physicality standpoint, and what we're going to look like as a team on that side of the floor. And those are probably two biggest things.
Awesome. That's very exciting to hear. I like that a lot, because kind of segueing into the next question, I think one thing as an alumni base, and I think even students at the school are looking, you know, ECU has definitely been, I've been there for a couple big wins, and even last year they had some, you know, a big win against Memphis at home. You know, I think wins like that get people excited, you know, and I think a lot of people want to see us continue to play in March, and, you know, even if that's, you know, NIT or March Madness, whatever the case may be. I think you alluded to this. Do you think we as the ECU community, or just the school, have the tools to get there and eventually maybe even get there?
The tools as a university and a program for us to be at some point an NCAA tournament team? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. You know, not only from like a, not even, maybe even like a coaching staff that can go into it. Do you think ECU as a school and also what you're trying to build have the potential?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? We got everything we need here. And I'm excited about it. We're very fortunate to have it. And that's the goal. There's no doubt about it. And look, people, you know, yes, there is a big picture of how this program, and we want to put this program together. And we understand that it's not going to happen overnight. But it is something that as a coaching staff, and we are trying to motivate our players to understand that it has to happen every day. Even though it's not going to happen overnight, it has to happen every day. Right. And so there's no doubt about it that that's our goal, is to be a postseason team. And there's not one coach in the country, new coach or veteran coach or anywhere in between, that would tell you their goal this year, this time of year, October 12th, is not to be in postseason play this year.
Right.
Every single coach, every single program is thinking that. And and that's what competition is. Yeah. So, we want it. But as far as the big picture, Joe, absolutely. ECU as a program, leadership, facilities, community, conference, state that we're in, we got everything to be a great national brand basketball job.
Awesome.
Program.
I want to run through a wall right now. I want it to be basketball season. I want to start getting after it. And I think one of the things we've talked about it as well, and I think if anyone who's been following ECU athletics, and especially ECU basketball, has seen you already kind of start building that team. You know, I think one of the big tools that, and it's been growing ever since, and I think it's really great to see you as a coach utilizing that, is, you know, recruiting and also utilizing the transfer portal really well, and bringing some, you know, whether it's players over from Tennessee, or, you know, recruiting well from like a freshman perspective. Do you think there's some, you know, tell us as much as you can, tell us a little bit about the team this year, and, you know, tell us a little about what you think can get us dancing to March.
Well, I think the first thing I'm going to do, Joe, is a lot of credit to the returning guys, Brandon Johnson, Javon Small, RJ Felton, Luigi DeBow, Dave Kasangane, and I think I forgot one of the player. I forgot one guy I mentioned, and Winston Tapps, of course, who's going to be cleared soon. But the bottom line is that I give a lot of credit to those guys. From a recruiting standpoint, we didn't go heavy portal. We got two transfers. Right. One junior college transfer. So they're all a little bit older and they have experience, but they all have 3 years to play, which is a good thing. And then everyone else is a freshman. And so we have a lot of freshmen. So from this year's team standpoint, and I just said this earlier on media day, the only way to get experience is to get experience. And so that's the only way to say you have experience is to experience it. And right now we don't have a whole lot of that on the roster, but you know, they get more experienced every day, and we have some scrimmages and we have things like that. And then you have your games early in the season, and you hope experience grows game to game, day to day.
Right.
So, you know, bottom line is that from a standpoint of exactly what this team looks like today, October 12th, it will look a lot different November 12th, December 12th, January 12th. But I love what the young guys have done, and I'm really proud of the returning guys.
That's awesome. And I think just, you know, looking at the team as a whole and looking at people that are brought in, like you said, the experience is there. And then also I think it's just going to build a big and good community. As you mentioned, we're in a good conference. We're in a tough conference for basketball. And especially as an alumni, you want to see the team succeed. Are there any, I mean, every, like you said, every game you want to win, obviously, but are there any, you know, opponents you see on the schedule that you think, okay, these are the big wins that, you know, as a, as a team, we win past these, you know, we can, you know, play with the best of them.
We have 31 games on our schedule. I'm going to tell you, Joe, from the first game to the last game, every game is hands down the biggest game of the year, period. There's not an opponent. You can take the jersey off the front and just put whoever you want on that right now. Every single game, we're trying to approach every day of practice like that in terms of whatever we're doing. So I couldn't even tell you by looking into our schedule and saying this game means this or this game means that. I don't know as a program if we're fortunate enough to be as successful as I believe we can be, if we'll ever think like that, but I sure as heck know we don't now.
That's awesome. That's good. That's good to hear. And especially like you said, anyone should be a big win. Like you said, we need to just flat out go try to beat anyone. And now kind of moving to some stuff. I appreciate you kind of diving in. I'm really excited about this year's team and about what's to come. I'm very, when I found out you were being named the head coach of the school, that makes me as an alumni very excited. I think a lot of other alumni feel the same way. And kind of moving away now from the court. You know, what are some things that are important to you? I know you mentioned family, you know, as one of them, but what are some other things maybe that, you know, you do to maybe get away from the game or, you know, that you like to do in your free time, even if that is staying, you know, just watching a game on TV? What are some things away from the court that are important to you as well?
I'm a fairly simple person, Joe, to be honest with you. My family, really, that's what it's about for me. And that, whether it's with work or without, meaning I'm very happy if I'm watching film and I have my daughters with me while I'm watching film or my wife with me. I'll do a lot of stuff where I'll be sitting wherever they're sitting and I'll be doing what I need to do. So spending time together is big. And again, obviously there's different times a year where you could spend more time together because maybe it's out of season or off season or whatever it may be. But even in season, just, you know, any free time I do have, I like to be with them. I am an avid sports nut. Kind of like we talked about at the beginning. I do. I love baseball. So this is an awesome time of year in the baseball playoffs and the Dodgers are in the playoffs and I'm a Dodger fan. So I love, you know, I love the playoffs and I'm into that. So, but outside of that, you know, if I get a chance to watch basketball and I don't have to think like a coach and I just get to watch it, I enjoy that.
That's awesome.
And I have three dogs and they're big ones and I love them too.
That's all. You know, I'm a dog man. Like you said, I have them right here. My Yankees won last night, luckily. So
I see that. I see you, Yankee. I see it there.
There's nothing like you said. There's nothing even for like a avid baseball fan. There's nothing quite like playoff baseball. Anything can happen. Any team that gets in there is a contender. And like I think it's very applicable that. And it's a brand new day every game of the series. I mean, especially as a Yankee fan, I'll tell you back in 2004, like that was hard to watch being up 3-0. So, and I'm sure as a Dodgers fan, not to bring up any harsh wounds, it's, you know, you guys finally won one, but there were a lot of years where it was like, come on, like, let's get this.
Well, you know what? Hey, Joe, maybe we'll get lucky this year and we'll see what everyone's been waiting for, a Yankee Dodger World Series.
Oh, I'll have to have you back on for that too. We'll have to chop up the series. Basketball.
Either that or I'll see you in the Bronx. We'll find a way to get up there.
That would be intense too. Like you said, compared, I'll give it to you as well. Like if the Yankees are winning, I'm fun to be around. But sometimes, you know, it's competitive. It's fun. I have some friends, but he's an EC alumni as well. He's a huge Dodgers fan as well. So we'll have to get that going for sure if it happens. A lot of history to that series too. But you kind of mentioned it as well. And I just recently found out with my wife, we're expecting our first daughter. As a father, and one of the things I also spoke to Coach Pastor about this too, there's no handbook on life to say, hey, here's how you be a great husband, a great father, a great so-and-so. There's no, like you just said also, I think you nailed it. It's the only way to get experience is through experience. So, you know, not that there's any set way to do things or anything like that. Maybe as a father, what are some things you would maybe pass along either to me or, and as well to other, you know, potential fathers listening out there?
Man, you know what? I definitely am not this advice guru when it comes to this, but you just said it. I just think, man, you're smart and you think, you know, with being conscious of decisions. I mean, you know, your kids, you know, they mean everything to you. They rely on you, especially as young kids. And I think every decision that fathers or mothers, parents, grandparents, anybody make when you're caring for young kids is for the best, for their best, and to make sure they're safe and to make sure that they're, you know, happy and to make sure that they're growing properly, whatever it may be. And then the other thing is just unconditional love. You know, I think unconditional love really is the most important things that any you know, son or daughter deserves. So, you know, I definitely don't have, my kids were up way past their bedtime as little kids all the time. And, you know, so I'm definitely not going to be the one to say this is the parenting guide. But I know if you love your family and you love your kids and you look out for them, and I think it usually works out.
That's good to hear. And I think I she hasn't even popped out yet, but I already love that little nugget as possible, and definitely. I can't wait to be here. Last before, it's a crazy kind of question, and I ask it to everyone, but last thing I want to, are there any, you know, topics or interests, you know, you wish to shed some light on or that are important to you? You know, this can range from anything like a charitable thing, or it could be as far as like, you know, you just wish more people watch D2 basketball. One of the guests I had on who he's currently playing in the MLS, but his big thing was he wished more people knew about college soccer, and, you know, that was his thing. Is there anything important to you or topics, anything like that, that you wish more people knew about and shed some light on?
Yeah, I don't know about, you know, wish knew more about. I think mental health is a really important thing. I think mental health is something that I think as leaders, as adults, I think if we can help understand that there's no stigma to it, there shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I think being able to be vulnerable and being able to talk to people and help people feel good, because the most powerful thing in the world is your mind. There's nothing more powerful than your mind. And when people are going through difficult times and it's more based on that, and they feel like they have nowhere to turn to, they feel like, you know, I don't think that is, you know, I think that's right. I think you really wish people can feel comfortable getting help. And I know this, it's getting so much better. But it is something that's very important to me and my family, just in terms of people understanding that, hey, it's okay to struggle and through that, and you have people around you, you know, that's it. And then the other thing is this. I think one thing people don't realize in college athletic is what players go through on social media. I think something, I don't know if it's something the average fan thinks about, that when a player maybe struggling, or a player has a game that's memorable in the wrong kind of way, the stuff that they go through and hear, you know, it's throwing blind darts. It's throwing darts, and then, you know, and you're covered up, and you can say what you want, do what you want. You can hurt people's feelings, and there's obviously no repercussions on it, and it's unfair sometimes. And so I do try and take that into account with our guys, and I think that's an important aspect of college sports and even pro sports that I wish was more under control, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I think one, like you said, I've seen professional, it's so much easier. And for someone, also for most of the time, it's an average Joe who's sitting on the couch, who's never ever been in a situation like that. Yeah. It's easy for them to sit on their couch and type something that's not necessarily positive and mean. And I think it's very also on point that you bring that up, especially, I think a lot of people around the country now have been, you know, if they follow ECU football, we have, our kicker has been in that situation this year. And I think a lot of people, you know, would, it's easy to say, hey, like, why isn't he doing better? But at the same time too, you know, he's just a college kid trying to do his best, trying to do what he can. And, you know, it's easy for other people outside and alumni and to say, hey, like, you know, this guy should transfer. And it was kind of sad to see, even at some points, like, the organization has met it, like Facebook had to disable comments on his Instagram because people were just writing so many terrible things and going on. Like, it should never, as an adult, you should never have to go to a kid and like go to them and like get a post on their page and go do something. Like, there's just not the right way to go about it.
I always say this, and I say this to our guys too, Joe, whether it's a female or male, it doesn't matter. Just take a step back sometimes and think, well, if that was my mom, or that was my dad, or that was my brother, or that was my sister, how would I feel if they were hearing that? And if you sometimes forget about yourself sometimes, because I think the most powerful thing is to think, what if your kid, or what if your mom or your dad or your brother or sister or someone in your family was going through something and receiving that kind of criticism in that kind of, you know, kind of vicious way? I always ask our guys, just imagine if someone was treating your family member like that, how would it make you feel? And, you know, it's just something, but anyways, you know, yeah, he's going to bounce back, man. He's a tough kid, a tough team, and he's going to bounce back.
Easily for sure. And thank you so much for sharing that. I think a lot of people will resonate with that and want to get into that. And then my last question I have for you before I let you go, I can kind of see in the back of my mind behind you, people shooting hoops, getting ready. This question, again, it is not at all related to sports. It's not at all related. It's kind of a silly question, so to speak. And again, I've had people say they're not comfortable answering because whatever reasons. But if you're a film person or you like watching movies, it's similar to the situation from the movie Step Brothers. And it is a kind of thought-provoking question. It's interesting. You may, again, don't feel as though you're obligated to answer it. But, you know, in that movie, there's a scene where, you know, they go to a playground and a bunch of fifth graders try to fight them. And they're adults and they try to, you know, fight back and they take on as many as they can. In that kind of similar situation, how many fifth graders do you think you could fight before they overpower you?
You know what? What were the guys' names?
In the movie, it's you know, there's Brennan and Dale, but it was a Will Ferrell movie from John C.
Oh, Riley. I know. And I know the movie very well, Joe. Yeah. I'm a huge Will Ferrell guy, but I know either Brennan or Dale. I haven't seen it. Well, I might have to brush up on it. Was really saying, hey, these fifth graders are there. Let's take the long route.
It's Dale, let's right? It's Dale because Dale. Like, so let's Chris take
Cardone. You know what, Joe? I'm at the point in my life that if I know some fifth graders want to attack me, I'm just going to go ahead and take the long route around.
Take the long way home. I agree.
I don't need to go to the jungle gym and mess with. And I remember what those fifth graders tried to make one of them do. They pinned him on the ground and they tried to make him do something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm just I'm just riding my bike the long way around. No reason to get into that.
Fifth graders, and you're from a recruiting standpoint, you probably, fifth graders are built a little bit different now. They're a little bit bigger. They're big now. They're huge. I mean, I don't want to mess with them either. They got to keep that head on a swivel. They're quick. I appreciate you answering that because it's one I love. I've asked that question to everybody, and it's just fun to hear people's reactions sometimes and, you know, see what they can say. But I appreciate you partaking with that. I agree. Sometimes that's just also the higher road to take, you know, just not even just go avoid it. I don't even need it.
There you go.
But no, thank you so much for joining me, Coach. I can't thank you enough. Before I let you go, is there anything else you wish to say or if anything you wish to add on? I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but this was great. I can't thank you enough for joining me.
No, man, it was one thing only. Go Dodgers, as I see you're Yankee, and more importantly, go Pirates.
Oh, yeah. Go Pirates for sure. We'll be watching. We'll be, you know, making sure. I mean, you may see me in a game down the road. And, you know, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, best with this season. We know with the program's in good hands. And especially after this episode, I feel even more confident about that. But with that, we thank you so much for joining me, Coach Schwartz. I appreciate it. Everyone listening, go check out the ECU team this year. We're going to be fighting this year. I think we're going to be a contender, definitely one of those teams people sleep on and, you know, need to start showing more respect to. But, Coach, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time, and I can't thank you enough for joining me.